Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Venture Property Podcast, and thank you very much for listening. Usually, I talk about the sponsor of the show, but I'm not going to do that today, because today is the last podcast that I'm actually going to do for a while. I've just decided to take a little bit of a break from the podcasting scene. There is loads and loads of really cool podcasts popping up, so I think you should check them out, and I will maybe make a return or do something else. So, it's quite prudent that the last episode for a long time is with somebody that I know very, very well. And I'm not going to go into too much detail. I am just going to introduce you to my good friend, Toby Wilde. How are you doing today, buddy?
Hi, Ryan. I'm well. How are you?
I am very well. I am excited that you are going to be my last interview for a while.
I'm really excited and glad you are you welcome me back. I'm surprised, to be honest. I must have done a better job than I thought last time.
Well, and I know that you are very competitive and you want to beat Alex Harrington Griffin's listening stats as well. So there's a win.
Well, we're all competitive in the real estate space to a degree, aren't we?
Oh, 100%. All of us are. So why don't you just give the listeners, for those of the listeners that don't know you, a little bit of a background about who you are and what the kind of thing is that you do and specialize in.
Sure. So I started my real estate journey in 2005, technically full time. I mean, if you want to get back further, you could say I started in 2001, I guess, when I sent at the age of 12 to work as a labourer on my dad's building site. But I like to consider I properly started in 2005 as an estate agent. I worked for some of the larger London corporates like Kinley, Folkard & Hayward, John Hollingsworth, which is now part of Thamesview, with Dexter's. And then set up my own little boutique agency where I sold that to go to university. From university, I was doing development consultancy and my own sort of small-scale developments. During that time, I consulted on sort of combined GDV, consulted on what I had my own projects with a combined GDV of about 18 million. Basically in 2016-17, I became so frustrated by how hard it was to find sites. And we had a significant investment of £10 million at the time to invest in real estate. And I'll be honest with you, I just couldn't find the deals. And when I did find the deals, the money was too slow to come because they'd already sold. But there was all the stuff that was on the market was just going for crazy, crazy money. And it wasn't just asking price of crazy money. People were actually paying the crazy money. So we got really frustrated by this. So a guy approached me at the same time. He'd had an idea of a full service history for your homes, akin to when you buy a used car. Off the back of that, we developed an idea or a platform called Scrift, which is one of sort of the pioneers of the centralized property data platform market. It's a little bit different from the likes of Land Insight or like Dacha, because it is residential focused and it is mass market. So I think already by paid users, I think they're probably still number one from when I left there. But they're basically mass market. So what they're used by is homeowners, estate agents, solicitors, developers or landlords mostly, but they're not such developer focused. They're not good for finding land, but all of the finite details you might want to find about one individual property, all the data you look to find it, you find it on there. So I spent a few years doing that. So sort of got my baptism in the early days of prop tech, I suppose. It's 3.0 with prop tech data platforms. So this is the third variant, if you consider portals the first, if you consider CRM software is the second generation of prop tech, then yeah, Scrift and data platforms and hybrid agencies are kind of the prop tech 3.0. But I'm already on what I consider to be the next evolution of prop tech, and that's where I'm focused these days.
I think it's amazing your sort of journey, and I know that me and you geek out a lot about technology. I believe that data is the new currency. I would be really, really, really interested to hear your thoughts on that point.
Sure. Well, big data is actually overtaking oil in terms of the wealthiest asset class. I think you're right. Data is the most important asset class, and it is the most valuable. So what I consider to be the next evolution of prop tech is actually using big data and algorithms to make informed investment decisions. Having built up a business which is subscription-led, it's just not a business model that I, with my psychology, particularly enjoy. But also, it's from my mind, there's not, until you get to mass market, there's not a lot of value in it. And, you know, to get to that marketplace is such a slog. You know, we spent 2 years building up to the thousands of users we had, and proud to say I shake the first 1,000 hands. But in reality, you're shaking someone's hand for a £20 a month subscription, or, you know, 240 quid per annum. So you have to do a lot of handshaking. What I actually think the best value you can do from data is an execution of it. So that's what Aparo looks to do, which is my new company. So Aparo is the first algorithm, as well as we know anyway, certainly in the UK, the first algorithm-driven real estate investment company. So we're currently launching a mini bond, and we're looking forward to sort of going to possibly towards fund status in the next couple of years. But what we are doing is we're using all of these thousands of data sources and these hundreds of millions of data entries that we have, using Bayesian logic and machine learning to effectively start predicting not only that an asset is going to show signs of financial stress, so therefore the vendor might be more motivated to sell, because effectively we're offering them a dignified exit before a receiver or administrator is appointed to come and buy the asset. But also we have an appraisal logic platform which is pre-populated by the algorithm. So effectively, we flag a property as stressed. It goes into the platform, and the logic platform says, yes, this is a good deal. No, this isn't a good deal, because it takes into the platform all of the information that you would or should want to know before you personally buy a property. So we've got all the macroeconomic data, the forward-looking capital appreciation, interest rates, buyer demand, average times on the market, time that the average length of planning it takes within that borough, et cetera, et cetera. So effectively what it gets down to is there's always going to be a human element, because we have to work out what the gross development value is, and we have to work out the build costs, et cetera. But the algorithm this property is stressed, and then the logic platform should say, this is the parameter of the value you need to get it between, effectively, or not between, but below. So here is, say it's, a two-bed flat in Aylesbury, for instance. You could say, look, you need to purchase this between £207,000 and £212,000. And above that, and you're pushing the realms of sensibleness. Because this is obviously a massive bugbear for us in the industry at the moment, about, what people are doing that's sensible and not.
I love the fact that you have done that. And I love that data and the algorithms and all the machine learning, and it sounds like it's just going to get better and better with time, the more and more it does it, which is pretty cool. Why, you touched briefly on the bond, why did you decide to start a bond then?
Well, as I said, for me, the value in data and in actually prop tech is executing on deals yourself. Mm-hmm. And unless you're very, very fortunate, you're always going to need co-investors or people to invest, or people whose money you're going to invest on their behalf. So a bond is the simplest way of doing it. And I should point out, it is a bond, but we're actually going out through a crowdfunding platform. So we're going out through Leo Prop Crowd. So we're proud to be one of their first bond raisers. They've done some for publications such as YPN and Coin Group, but we're sort of the first sort of big bond they're going to try and do, or multi-million pound bond they're going to try and do. And it also has the IFISA umbrella, or it should do, when it's waiting on the approval of that. But for me, I think bonds are a fantastic way of doing it, because there's too much risk in investing in equities in real estate at the moment. A lot of developers who were around 3-4 years ago are failing to deliver the returns they promised, or failing to redeem the investment at all. And also there's a big risk at stake with it, because at best you have a second charge, at worst you just have a personal guarantee. Bonds, on the other hand, they offer you a guaranteed rate of return. You know what you're in for, you're going to get the money, what exactly that's going to result in for you. So, I mean, I should always point out, by the way, I'm not a qualified investment advisor, so I can't tell you whether what we're doing is a good investment or a bad investment. All I can say is tell you what the product offers and why I think that we've got the right strategy. But if anyone listening to this is interested in bonds, I really suggest you seek financial advice to make sure they actually suit your financial position, because there are a lot of companies out there that are over-promising and under-delivering. We've seen it recently with some massive failures within the sector. Some even rather large brand names have gone, and it's a shame, because it actually is detrimental to the people who are doing bonds or doing crowdfunding raises in the correct way, because you know you all get tarred by the same brush, and there's no, you don't read in the newspapers about the guys who are redeeming their bonds, or you know, the people who are earning their coupons, you know, for 2 years before getting redeemed or whatever, you know. So it's, there's a lot of negativity out there, but it's definitely something people should seek advice on.
Mm, I think we've just reiterated that point that, you know, you should make sure that you should seek independent advice and make sure that they are the right investments for you. So thinking about the current economic environment then that we are in the property sector, is now the right time to launch a bond?
Well, I think so. I think so greatly, because as I said, we Spriff even came about because of my frustrations with the market as I saw it in 2016 and 17. It was ridiculous how many sites were appraising not to buy. All of the guys or girls who went out and bought these sites for that money in 2016, 17, I keep an eye on all the sites I don't buy. Half of them are going into, I mean, not half, that's a bit of a stretch, but a lot of the ones that I saw that I was like, what are you doing? They're only being kept in play, if they're being kept in play, by planning uplifts, that like speculative planning uplifts that they got, which they've done well for. Best of luck to them. I'm glad they're not in as much trouble as potentially they could be. But a lot of these sites are going bust. You know, I'm going past sites all the time in central London that where you've seen cladding up and promotions coming soon. Here's the developer's name. Contact here to buy them. They're all painted over, and the site work is stopped. There's a site in Acton I looked at, which Savills priced up at £1,200 a square foot. I came in at £1,000 a square foot. The market's turned since then anyway, so I believe they're worth about £900 a square foot now. But that's fine. If I'd have bought them looking to make my 20%, I'd be wiping my mouth on the site and making it, you know, maybe an 8%, 10% profit if I was lucky. But this guy's gone bust, you know. For 18 months they've had a digger on the site in cladding, and I went past there only a month ago and it's all been painted over. So I think it's all down to the level of risk you have. And in terms of our bond as well, I don't think it's fiscally responsible to offer guaranteed returns of 10, 12, 15, 20% as some of these developers are doing. Especially, I'm always wary about the ones that ratchet up over years. It's like, yeah, it's 10% this year, 12% next year, 15, then 18, then 20. The economics of being a real estate developer, I mean, you cannot offer anybody, even on equity money, 20%. You know, because if that's your equity, effectively you're bridging the difference between your senior debt and your equity. So if you've got your senior debt at 5%, you've got your equity debt at 10%. If it's a 2-year new build project, that 20%, they're basically just taking the profit out of their chunk of money. The way that we make our money is we have the difference between the bank's you know, lending rate and ours. So I'm really not pro these these bonds or these crowdfunding platforms that offer guaranteed returns at anything above. Yeah, I mean, I just don't think you can offer it above 10-12% on equity anyway. And that's by gearing. What differentiates us is because if you've got anything up to 10,000 properties on our algorithm at any one time, what actually we do is we're a high-frequency trading company, you know, which almost moving towards the realms of we buy any home. So, you know, that kind of style of business. So the way that we've geared our bond is actually, if it's sat with the regulated custodian, then they earn 5%. Once it's deployed out into a deal, it earns 12%. Mm. So bearing in mind we're a high-frequency trading company and we're looking to be in and out of each deal within 2-3 months, because there are any sort of refurbs, we're focusing on quick refurbs at the moment, because they're still there's still a market that's moving effectively, and for us as well, we really need to build up as much track record as we can, as quickly as we can. So doing small deals and lots of them actually makes a lot of sense. So sort of £250,000 to £500,000 refurbs in the southeast. You know, obviously we don't want to go too far from where we have the resources to manage the project. But But effectively, yeah, you get 5 minutes with the custodian, 12 minutes deployed into the market, which if you look at it at a blended rate of sort of 70%, if you think we predict the money will be out 70% of the year, that still offers 9.9. But it means that you know that I'm not out there putting money, or you'd hope that I'm not out there putting money into stupid deals because I'm desperate to earn back a coupon because I've overpromised to my investors, you know?
That's a key point as well, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of people out there panicking and rushing to get into deals because they've guaranteed the investors money back at a certain rate that is just absolutely farcical.
I don't know. I bang my head against the wall. I really do with a lot of it. You know, until people start viewing real estate companies and real estate investment as a 10, 20, 30, 100 year, you know, take 100 year view on things, you know, that we're always going to have these cyclical markets with these people who, you know, fly too close to the sun and go pop. And it's just, it just happens time and time again, you know. And I say that from having, you know, just the shoe being on our foot effectively. And my father had a big construction company which went into receivership during the 92 recession overnight, effectively. And fortunately, we, you know, there was nothing untoward. We were just scuppered by interest rates, as many people were. So we walked away with assets from it, which is rare for a real estate company to do. But it's, you know, it is frustrating, I have to say, to see the market out there in its current condition. But I think that's, I think actually, although it's frustrating because it's disappointing to see, but I actually think it's very exciting because now, in my opinion, is the time to be investing in real estate. You know, Brexit, we've been due a realignment since 2008. I don't need to tell you, Ryan, about repossession levels in the 2008 recession. They were, I mean, I'll give some statistics for our listeners anyway, but the repossession levels were 0.36 to 0.41% of the total housing stock per annum in the years, subsequent years following the 2008 recession. What do you think it was in the, what do you think it was in the 1992 recession?
Go on, surprise me.
0.77% of the housing stock per annum, roughly, was repossessed in the 1992 recession. That's despite, in 2008, the market falling 60% greater. So if you actually, if you think about that, the market fell 60% greater, people, less repossession levels because of artificially low interest rates. Well, I'm afraid the artificially low interest rate in world we're living in is coming to an end. And interest rates are going to go up over the next few years. Help to Buy is being scrapped by 2023. You know, so effectively, a lot of these people who are out there who have overreached or followed bad strategies prior to 2008, who have kept in the market, and we all know there's quite a few of them out there, who have, you know, 20, 50, 100, 200 buy-to-lets, you know, in okay regions of the UK, but didn't know what they were doing in the first place, overbought, and there's still some of them in negative equity from 2008 anyway. Some of them are wiping their mouths. But the problem is now you've got Section 24, which means, you know, any equity they had left has been wiped out. So a lot of these people are going to start coming back to the market, you know. I see it all the time now. I've seen portfolios with 50, well, I got a portfolio the other day I'm about to send to a mutual friend of ours, which is 54 houses and flats in Oxford. And, you know, that's, again, they've owned them for ranging between 20 and 13 years, effectively. And you can tell exactly what's happened. They're self-certified mortgages that came along. They've bought, overreached, been kept in by the artificially low interest rates and the other economic stimulus the government kicked in. And they're going to get in trouble. You know, a lot of them are going to get in trouble these days. So so I actually think it's a prime time to be investing in real estate. And Savills predicts an aggregate capital uplift over the next 5 years of 14.8%. I'm not saying I entirely agree with Savills, but I do think, you know, this Brexit, what is called the Brexit, really, you know, correction as we've been seeing over the last couple of years, and, you know, a lot of people going into insolvency. I think it's a good opportunity. And by the way, just to point out on statistics, insolvency rates were up 15% this quarter on the same quarter last year. So I think we're definitely in line to see a lot of corrections, but also all the pent-up buyer demand that's been out there. They've been waiting for these prices to correct. I think actually it's a good time to be trading property, because actually I think if you can provide good bits of kit in nice condition without a chain, and definitely not without a hybrid estate agency locked into that chain, I think you've got a good potential to make good money and sell at a good price.
I completely agree with you. I think trading is actually a fantastic strategy to be doing right now, one that I'm employing myself. And it's amazing to it's like back to the unsexy for me. Just pick them up, churn them out, pick up another one, churn them out, pick them up, churn them out. And I actually really, really enjoy it. It plays to my strengths.
There's nothing unsexy about a pound note and knowing
that is very true.
And also knowing that you're not going to catch a cold, you know. I mean, I suppose it goes back to that old catchphrase, you know, what's the old catchphrase about the cash flow, something vanity, cash flow's vanity, profit sanity. There's more money now, or certainly appear to me, there's more money in trading real estate assets these days than there is actually sort of new build sites. Although it's starting to get better on the new build.
And having been through new build, having been through flipping property, having been through flipping planning uplift, selling sites on that way, and having done HMOs, I actually think that the cash flow is so much better in trading property. If you look at a HMO, for example, how long do you have to hold that property for to make net the same amount that you make by flipping a deal? You know, not to say that all deals aren't going to, you know, make the same money, and some are going to make less. You might even lose some money because it's property. But I just so much prefer it. There's no tenants. It's a quicker time scale as well, so you can react to different changes in different markets quicker. I just do prefer it. One of the questions that I've got for you then, because I know you firsthand and I know one of your absolute strengths is pulling in a team together. And I know that you wouldn't have taken this on without knowing the kind of people that you wanted in your team and then going hell for leather to get those. So who is in the team for this bond then?
Do you know, I love the way you know me, because you know me well enough to know that I have lots of shortcomings, but I'm actually quite open about my shortcomings.
Yep.
You know, I'm good at what I'm good at. I know a bit about real estate and I know a bit about technology, which is what I enjoy. But you're right. I have shortcomings. Pardon?
And you're very good on the phone.
Yeah, but I can't write, so I've got to talk. So I'm severely dyslexic. So writing, I'll tell you about the MD in a second, but the poor guy, we've been writing this this pitch deck, as it were, for the last few months as we built the platforms. And my God, he must be banging his head. He is banging his head against the wall. But I think he sees the light side of it now, because he's like, Toby, that doesn't actually read like that, and that doesn't mean that. I mean, when you say it like it means that, but actually you've written it and it means this. I'm like, oh, okay. So I swear to God, we've been on 13 drafts of the deck. I've just done draft 14 last night. I wanted to add some more macroeconomic data. But anyway, yeah, I'm good at what I'm good at. Fine, I know I need help. We all need help, and there's no. I think that's actually a strength in admitting your faults and your failings. Nobody can do it all. So the team I've got around me, I'm very fortunate to have known two of them since I was a kid. I've known one of them 10 years, one of them, say, kid. I'd like to think I was a kid 10 years ago. I'm not quite that young anymore. And the other one I've known since I was sort of 15 years old. So, but it all came together. The first person is sort of, you know, when you pull together is the technology. So I've got a friend who has a collective of coders called Nicely Coded Collective, that he used to do some work on. He built the original sort of decompressed or music platform. So yes. Before the days of iTunes and Spotify, he built a house platform that embedded onto your Bebo or MySpace account. If people listen to your credits, you've got vouchers for games, for merchandise or gig tickets. So he's the man who's built the technology. So when Spotify started to build, they came and asked him for a bit of help on how to do it. So he knows those guys well. And after that as well, he came and helped up with all the data. He's head of data management at Spriff. So he knows a lot about real estate as well. He's got a really cool way of looking at it. But also he brings together with him a couple of guys that he's got experience with working for previously. So it means I've always got one of them in the office who knows the project. And can work on it full time, which, you know, considering he's a key man, to have a couple of them there who have all built the platforms together and work together, you know, actually it is great, because it means we've always got a dedicated Aparo team member there But, you know, if one of them goes on holiday or whatever, then there's somebody to do the cover, because tech is, you know, massive part of our business, but it's also, you know, some nichest and also very expensive. The basic salaries for guys in tech are incredible. So I've got him. I've got, as the director of construction, I've got my old friend Phil Glenn. He used to be used to direct all the North London projects for Aspect Property Maintenance. And in addition to that, he refurbished Buckingham Palace, Blenheim Palace, Windsor Castle. So he's a very, very credible guy in the construction space and in the refurbishment space. He actually put in the first kitchen on the first ever development I did for me. So I've known him that long. And he also is ex-Special Forces, so he's very, very organized. And then brought in to help run us and bring us our motley crew together. I hired the former managing director of HSBC Bank and Citibank. It's a gentleman called Babak Garbi. So he's got 30 years of investment banking experience, running teams on the trading floors of those guys. So he knows a lot about finance, is very detail orientated and very good at bringing people together and sort of, doing all the financial side of it, which is, you always need a keen eye in that sector to keep an eye on how the business is performing, but also to make sure that, you know, actually we're meeting our objectives and where we want to go. And also we've got Karen Nguyen as well, who's working with us as a consulting compliance officer, helping us make sure that we get all of that right. And we've got a couple of other guys who are sort of from an estate agency or chartered surveyors background who are helping us with deal appraisals on a part-time basis. Because that obviously is a big problem with us. It's, you know, how do we keep payroll, you know, justifiable for a business of our size, but also be able to execute or offer on as many deals as we want to. You know, real estate's a numbers game. You know, we need to offer on a hell of a lot of properties in order to get one or two at the discounts that we want. So it's we've brought in outside help from another firm. I can't say who they are yet, because I'm just about to announce the deal. But they're all ex big sort of five estate agents. So you've got the likes of Mike Franks, Apple's guys, Stratton Parker guys, who all, you know, moved on because they're, you know, getting a bit more mature. You know, don't really want agency life, want a bit more flexibility, and also want to earn sort of, you know, earn for themselves. So yeah, and then the final two people we've got on the team are the non-executive directors, or the advisory board. Make it sound a little bit more tech, I think, advisory board. But we've got John Corey, who's I'm sure everybody does know or should know about John Corey. If you don't, you need to go away and Google him right now. Ryan and I are big fans. Yes. You don't mind me saying that, do you, Ryan? Speaking on your behalf?
Not at all. Definitely a big fan. I believe that everybody needs a bit of JC in their lives.
Definitely. So he's been with us at the project since the start, and he's been really, really helpful in terms of advising us, because he obviously comes from a tech background, having worked with Steve Jobs at Next Computers. But he also built trading platforms for banks such as UBS, and knows a hell of a lot about real estate and real estate funds and or crowdfunding. You know, crowdfunding is considered as one of the world's leaders in crowdfunding knowledge, isn't he? Mm. You know, he's always doing talks and stuff. So he's very, 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 very clever, really helpful. And we've just appointed Helen Chorley this week as one of our non-executives, who's again another investment banker. Incredible at appraising deals, really, really well for her, known for her due diligence, and very, very good as well, because she does make you think outside the box, or actually not so much outside the box, she makes me think inside the box. He's like, yes, Toby, but actually this implies this, and have you thought about the repercussions of this being this and that? So actually it's very, very useful, because there's always going to be things that you overlook or don't think about because you don't have the knowledge to do. So having team members like this, who got 40 years, experience, or 30 years experience in investment banking and real estate, in crowdfunding, etc. Actually having the phone, being able to pick them up on the phone is brilliant.
Mm, definitely. And that's a really cool team. And I think I've met pretty much most of that team, if not all of that team, or personally know them.
You've met every single one, because anytime you're in London, you know, we try and find any excuse to meet you. Last time we had a juice together in the shadow of St. Paul's, I seem to remember the whole team.
We did indeed. I remember that. That was very good. And then we've met loads of different times. We've met Babak so many times. But what? The only thing I'd change about him is his football team.
Yes, potentially. So there you go. I make up for it in other ways. I've introduced you to three other Liverpool fans recently, haven't I?
Yes, you have indeed. Yes. So, yeah, well, before we get onto that and start talking about football, the question that I have asked everybody towards the end of the interview then, and I think this is going to be a pretty tough question for you, is how do you switch off? How do you relax?
I don't. It drives my missus crazy. It really does. I'm obsessive. It's one of my character traits, I guess, with the ADHD and the dyslexia, but I find it incredibly tough to switch off. And honestly, I mean, I'm not... Not in a bad way. I think when I was at Spriff, it wasn't a bad way because I was surviving on 2 hours of sleep a day and not looking or feeling very healthy towards the end, just because it had been years of it, you know, networking till 12 o'clock every night at PINs and PPNs and all the rest of it, coming home, doing all the follow-up emails, going to sleep for a few hours, going to the office, and doing it all over again. So I was exhausted. But this year has been better because I get to live in my own mind a little bit again, you know, writing decks and thinking about deals and actually appraising deals and that. So it's never like I'm too stressed. I'm never really switched on, you know. I think, as I mentioned earlier, at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock this morning, I was finally finishing off some macroeconomic data, to do with the deck, which is great because it's a very important thing to put in there. It's very interesting for me personally. I actually enjoy it. And I was really in my flow, so I didn't want to stop. But the beauty is now I don't have a commitment in terms of I don't have to be, you know, in there cold calling people or doing effectively my meetings. I've strategically these days booked for the afternoons. I won't book a meeting before 11, and 11 till 7, absolutely fine. I'll take as many meetings as I can fit in. But in case I get into this work mode where I'm enjoying myself and doing good work, I want to continue. So I'm quite happy to work late and then get a bit of a line and not get up to 9:30, 10 o'clock the next morning because I've had a productive night and I've got stuff done and the world is quiet and I'm being left alone to do what I enjoy.
So I think,
but yeah, in terms of switching off, I need to work on getting more hobbies, I think, because I'm obsessive about real estate.
So
we do go to the cinema and I do like to read a book occasionally, but yeah, I've got to work on that more, Ryan. But when you're having fun, you don't want to stop, right?
Exactly. So I think that's the best point to leave this interview on. So if people want to get in touch with you, where is the best place for them to do so?
Sure. Well, our website is going to be launching next week or so. So it's aparo.co.uk. And for information about the bond, you need to go to leoproccrowd.com. And then you need to register with them and fill in all the disclaimers and all that kind of stuff before you can see any information. So yeah, aparo.co.uk or go to leoproccrowd.com for our bond.
And I will let you crack on because I know you've got so much to do. Thank you so much for coming on, buddy.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, Ryan. I've really enjoyed it again. Sorry I've talked so much this time. It's a lot more than last time.
No, it's always good. I will speak to you soon.
Cheers, buddy. Speak to you soon. Lots of love.